You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modge Podge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modge Podge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Welcome to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM FC Channel 85. Obviously, Andrew Wiebe not here. Otherwise, he would have told you our exact location, which is New York, New York. But I'm David Goss. I will be hosting in his stead alongside Ben Baer and Matt Doyle.
Goss, man, that left me so cold. You couldn't do from Midtown Manhattan or from the Mecca of foosball, 420 Fifth Avenue. Like, come on.
From Nerd Central, Major League Soccer, David Goss. I didn't want to step on Weeby's toes. Everyone's got to have their thing. If I take that, what does Weeby have when he comes back?
Weeby does have nothing.
He has nothing. That's true. It's a very good point.
So I don't want to get in that place, and I don't want to be, you know, known as trying to take over for him while he's off gallivanting in Mexico.
Gallivanting? That's definitely the word that we use on this podcast.
Yeah. Whenever anyone goes away.
Yeah. Even if it's for work.
Can't leave the office. Doyle, what'd you say about us last week while we were gone? What was Torchy's Tacos? What happened with that?
I think it was Abner on his Instagram and Snapchat. Just these piles of like shredded pork and avocado and some sort of salsa. I was into it.
Yeah, that is Torchy's Tacos, apparently. Now we have a date set up for all of us.
Torchy, send us some tacos.
Yeah, Torchy's literally tweeted at us for us to come, I think, in Colorado before the USA versus Trinidad and Tobago qualifier. We've got a lot to talk about today. Obviously, a big weekend of Major League Soccer action. It was, once again, insanity, as it has been all season, and we're going to get into all of that. We'll also get into an interview. His name is Raul. He only has one name. He only has one name because he's the greatest goal scorer in Real Madrid history, because he's probably one of the sweetest human beings on the face of the planet. He lives and breathes Real Madrid. They were announced this weekend as the MLS All-Stars opponents. The All-Star game presented by Target. It's going to happen on August 2nd at 9 p.m. Eastern time on FS1, Unimas, and TVA Sports up in Canada. And he sat down
at
Toyota Stadium field. That game will be at Soldier Field. On the field in Dallas with Ben Baer one-on-one. Ben, you face off against one of the greatest strikers in world history.
I mean, it was a great experience. Dude is class. Like, he just exudes class. Like, he's just a great human being. He, like, mm-hmm. took time to, like, talk to me. Like, he wanted to know what I was about. Like, what's the deal?
What are you about?
I don't know. It's a great question.
How do you it sounds like he was getting in your head. How do you even
He was just interested in me. He was just interested, you know, in what was going on. He wasn't just there to be there. He wanted to be involved. He wanted to see what was going on.
So we spoke to him at Generation Adidas Cup. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the All-Star game, and, of course, we'll have Raul's interview coming up in the second segment. Let's start with Major League Soccer, though, in the first. And the weekend opens up, 3 games on Friday, a great Friday to get going. And just to start it all off, David Villa decides he's going to score the goal of the year, like, 5 weeks into the season, so everyone else can just stop trying to do stuff like that, unless Quincy Amerikwa comes back from injuries, because we know what he does. And Philadelphia lost once again. Doyle, we talked about it 2 weeks ago. We talked about it 3 weeks ago. We talked about it last week. I'm sure you and we talked about it on Thursday when I wasn't here. What's going on in Philly? What can they do? Alberg gets the start in that number 10 role. Isn't that productive?
He didn't do anything in that role. I think he's still playing his way to fitness. He came to camp out of shape. And I think the number Taylor Twellman said on the broadcast was 15 pounds overweight, which is not that is just brutal. And so not having a guy to pull those strings kills them. Not having a winger who can hit the final ball, because everybody raves about Ilson Jr., I guess we're calling him, his 1v1 ability. And he's a lot of fun. He always beats his guy. But he never completes the pass afterwards, so he doesn't create a lot of chances. Chris Pontius is not the player he was last year. And then the other big issue is in central defense. Oguchi Onewu hasn't been great. He got replaced by Jack Elliott, who had made a good debut. I thought he was pretty good. But then you have G. Marquez, who should be a veteran and should be locked down at this point, just completely falling asleep on the Jack Harrison goal. And it just keeps snowballing and adding up. This is a pretty demoralized fan base. It's a pretty demoralized team, it looked like. I understand the call for changes. I don't believe that this is on Jim Curtin. I think it would be a mistake to get rid of Jim Curtin, because I look at this team and they are prepared and they do the right things every single week. Their game plan is on point. The first 45 minutes, they took it to NYCFC. They just do not have the talent in the attacking third to turn that into goals. And it just keeps killing them week after week after week.
Doyle, if you're saying it's not the management, you're saying it's not the coach, it's obviously the players then. Ben, we've talked a little bit about trades that could happen in the league. A few guys, we're going to talk about Columbus. Ethan Finley starts behind Nico Hansen in this one. They just picked up Kakuta Mane. Tommy McNamara doesn't even play. Are there guys out there in this league? Do you see a move coming for Philly?
I'm not sure I see a move coming, but I could see. I mean, I see why those players would fit with Philly. It just comes down to whether they actually want to make a move. How many more weeks are they going to give us before they do something? Because clearly what they're doing right now is not working.
They're playing they're playing Montreal this weekend. So if they're going to get a win, then would be the time. As well on Friday night, a big-time game for Freddie Montero. He gets going in MLS. He gets two goals against his old team in Seattle. He does not celebrate. Of course, that's what all of us care about more than anything else in the world. were you impressed by this performance from Vancouver? Because it shouldn't probably have been a win for Vancouver with the way Seattle played, but they got it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm impressed by any win over a rival. And Vancouver are still kind of figuring out what they are as a team, because they're not the quick get out on the wings and counter at pace team that they have been over the last 4 years. Montero isn't really that type of player. Teixeira, who had a good game, isn't really that type of player. Alphonso Davies isn't even really that type of player. But they were opportunistic. They were solid at the back, and I think through deep central midfield, you know, Matias Laba bounced back after I think maybe a tough couple of weeks. This is a good win. At the same time, Sounders aren't what we all thought they would be. Clint Dempsey is playing well, but Ladero looks a step off the pace. He certainly hasn't been as influential as he was last year. And I think it's pretty obvious at this point that Jordan Morris hasn't quite recovered from that knock he picked up about a month back that kept him out of the U.S. qualifiers.
Ladero not scoring. Dempsey hits the post like three times in this game, basically. Are you worried about Seattle yet, Ben?
Well, nice. No, going back to last year, that my answer to that question, I guess, is no. I'm not worried. I don't see.
Can you guarantee you're not worried?
I can guarantee that I'm not worried right now. That's what I can guarantee. I can guarantee. Well, you know, they might be able to bring in a player such as Ladero, you know, later in the season.
Right, they still have a DP spot.
They still have a DP spot. I don't think they're firing Brian Schmetzer anytime soon. So I'm not. So it's not going to be exactly a replica of last season. But yeah, I mean, no reason to get concerned. Obviously not a great start. Dempsey did look great in this game, off the post a couple of times. Just didn't fall.
In 51 minutes, yeah. for Will Bruin.
It's not easy to get a road win at your rivals. So
Doyle's just trying to stir things up from the bridge that he lives under. In
yeah,
Santa's.
But seriously, at some point you got to take a look at Will Bruin. Maybe push Jordan Morris out to one of the flanks so they can offer a little bit of penetration out of midfield and use his speed. But they got to get more out of that center forward spot. It's 550 minutes for Jordan Morris this year, and he's got one goal.
Yeah, you would think also between Bruin and Ship that they would split starting games. Yeah. You wouldn't think it's Ship's job to lock in, and we've seen Morris be talented out on that left side. Friday night finish
up. Hashtag Will Bruin 200, just throwing it out there.
Friday night finished up with San Jose FC Dallas. FC Dallas gets the goal. Kellen Acosta is the best soccer player on the face of the earth. And then San Jose is able to work their way back. They get another Goonie Time equalizer, which they're not calling Goonie Time because they don't want to be the Goonies, because this isn't the Goonies and it's San Jose and there's things about Goonies and everyone else wants to talk about it. San Jose gets the draw. Doyle, what do you walk away from this one with? It was an exciting finish, at least San Jose, we've seen basically every home game, they come on heavy in the second half.
They come on heavy in the last 20 minutes of this one when they put Tommy Thompson in there and they had him on one wing and Jahmyr Hyka on the other. I think Danny Hosen added something when he came on at center forward. They looked dangerous. They were the better team against Dallas. And this is a team since 2012, since Goonie time, they have been at or near the bottom of the league in goals scored. I wrote about it in the column on Friday. And they haven't had a number nine who could be a real consistent threat in front of goal. And Chris Wondolowski is 34 years old now, and he's starting to show his wear and tear. And I think you have to ask, this team is built around Wando. It's built for him to get chances and score goals. I don't believe at this point in his career that Wando is a guy who should have a team built around him. There needs to be something a little more creative in the center of the pitch, and they certainly need something more out of Marcos Ureña, who's a very hard worker and does a lot of good things, but has never been a reliable finisher. So if you want to ask why San Jose can play well week after week after week and score just one goal week after week after week, there you go. If you have a 4-4-2, the guys in the two line, they have to be dangerous, and they're really not.
San Jose, some good talent on the field. Obviously, Godoy in central midfield continues to be impressive. Let's go to Saturday, though. One of the most talented teams, I think, in the league, Atlanta, goes up to Montreal. They get a 1-0 lead. Kenwin Jones finally gets his first goal for them. They give up the red card. They go down 2-1. They lose 2-1 to Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Are you more excited for Montreal that they get the win or more worried that 45 minutes, man up, they weren't able to score? They finally got it in the 93rd minute.
In between on that, you know, I wouldn't be that excited if I was. I mean, you should be excited for any win.
First win.
In MLS. Your first win. Obviously, not scoring a goal for 45 minutes. Not looking all that dangerous, to be honest, even in those 45 minutes. Not the greatest news. You know, you should win if you're up a man for 45 minutes and you're tied. You should win that game. So
Alec Kahn had a pretty nice second half, though. That wasn't. I understand what you're saying. They weren't getting tap-ins from 4 yards, but like that, he played a really good second half, didn't allow any bad rebounds or the type of stuff that you kind of expect from a team that's defending on the back foot for the entire time. So I don't think there's a lot of reason to be concerned here if you're Montreal. I think they stayed
even,
on the front
even,
foot.
Even with the
they
fact were, this is their first win, that didn't mean... There was so. I mean, with their midfield getting older, the defense hasn't looked good. I mean, they got Piatti. I mean, they're relying everything. Everything is Piatti with this team. Seems like to me.
Yeah, and they got the two young players, Balu Tabla and Anthony Jackson Hamel, link up for the goal. Pretty impressive flick from Jackson Hamel.
Balu Tabla actually changed that game. His ability to when he gets on the ball, you know, he is a north-south player. And he has the first touch and close control and ability to create separation to make that dangerous. So I think that ended up turning the game in the final 25 minutes or so. And Jackson Hamel was a box presence. And I thought that if he had come on earlier, then I think Montreal would have been more dangerous. But that's credit to Atlanta for that, because they're still so terrifying on the counterattack. Even when they have guys suspended, you know, with red cards, and even when they're missing a guy like Joseph Martinez, Almiron on one side and Villalba on the other, that's as terrifying a two-man counter in the league. So you have to play, even when you're up a man, you have to play it a little bit conservative against this group. I thought it was a good job by Montreal.
Is Almiron the best player in the league right now?
No.
You don't think? I mean, he's just... Well, that terror, like you just, I mean, if I was, if my team's playing
awesome.
Atlanta and Almiron's on the ball anywhere in the field, I'm freaking out.
Yeah, but
he's going to beat the guy. He's going to spray it past somewhere. He's going to get goal dangerous.
Do you think he's better than Valeri right now?
I think Valeri's been amazing. I would say they're 1 and 2. I'd put Almiron number one.
Ooh, wow. Atlanta making noise. They play RSL next week. That should be an interesting one. We'll get to RSL in a second. Let's talk about your favorite in-the-box player, I think, Kyle Larin. He gets the goal laid on. Orlando gets a 2-1 win against the Galaxy. They set the record. They open up their new building with four straight wins. There's so much energy in that building. We see them go to Columbus and look fairly flat. They come home, and all of a sudden, you know, Will Johnson's a world-class striker, and Kyle Larin and Carlos Rivas is, like, doing things at will from inside the box, outside the box. It's a whole different team when they play at home.
I think we need more of a sample size for their road games. We need to see how they do play on the road because they've only played one now. But this is what, you know, this is the textbook, right? This is the blueprint. You have to protect your home turf, and they've done that. And tip the cap to them, especially because they've done it with so many injuries and absences and new guys sort of adjusting and integrating on that back line. Jonathan Spector has been, I'm not going to say he's been the best defender this year, but he's been arguably the most important. And I think that Jason Christ deserves a lot of dap for that. Carlos Rivas is so close to being a really, really, really good player.
This is the closest he's ever been in MLS.
Yeah. This was his best game.
Yeah.
He was not just, you know, threatening goal or slipping Kyle Larin through with a just beautiful slip pass in the final third, but just muscling Gilles Van Damme off the ball. There was no question who the stronger player was in that situation. Stuff like this is stuff we haven't seen from Carlos Rivas, and his decision-making was better. There's a lot of stuff to be excited about if you're an Orlando City fan going forward, but there are still some holes.
So there's two big question marks for me coming out of this game. I'm going to throw one at Doyle, one at Ben. Ben, Nathan Smith starts at right back at LA Galaxy. Did not look up to snuff. Robbie Rogers out for the season. Are they going to get a right back? I mean, do they have to?
I think they need to. Nathan Smith is not the answer. I'm sorry. they need to find another solution. I don't know why Rafa Garcia hasn't been given more of a shot. I don't know if I'm not sure if he's the answer, but I know that Nathan Smith is not.
Doyle, for you, Kaká's not in. He will come back. Mm-hmm. Does he? I mean, he slots right back in. How do you move this team back around to get him in there?
I think you put Kaká at the point of the diamond.
And Giles Barnes on the bench?
Yeah. Yeah, no question. You put him at the point of the diamond and you make sure the structure behind him with Nocerino, who's played pretty well at the back point, and then you have Will Johnson and Higuita as your shuttlers. That's, you know, that I would go to battle with that as long as Kaká stays healthy. And then you have MPG and Giles Barnes off the bench. Obviously, the trick is going to be holding on to Kyle Larin through that summer transfer window, because there are going to be teams serious about making some plays for him. Even though he was not particularly good this past weekend, he still found a way to be very, very influential, goal aside.
I love that his goal celebration now is just run to the corner and then drag a teammate, because everyone jumps on him and he's so big and strong. This week it was Spector, which is ridiculous. Normally it's like Carlos Rivas. He just starts walking with someone on his back and drags someone around. A big game going on Saturday. Chicago Fire continuing to roll with Schweinsteiger. He gets the first goal after going a man up because Javon Watson decided that he was playing a different sport all of a sudden.
Javon Watson decided that he was going to be peak Javon Watson.
He gets called.
That was the most ridiculous yellow card. He ran 25 yards after he was already carrying a yellow, and he ran 25 yards to just sweep the ankles out from an attacker whose back was to goal 45 yards from goal. That is, I got texts from some of his former teammates saying, like, that's just Javon. He decides he doesn't want to play anymore, and he's going to make a foul like that, and goodbye. And the Revs kind of followed him down the drain. The Revs did.
I mean, it was
a little bit to his credit. The first yellow was a little bit tough, but he already has that yellow, so he's got to make a better decision. Let's talk about Chicago. They've played all weird games since they got Schweinsteiger. They've had red cards throughout, so we haven't seen them exactly play another team even, but they got to play with the three with McCartney, Juninho, and Bastian Schweinsteiger, the one player I'm going to forget of the three of them. In that midfield for a while, the Revs were down a man for like 70 minutes, 65 minutes. What did you see from them, Doyle? Schweinsteiger gets the first goal, making the run out of midfield. Chicago feels pretty good right now.
They feel pretty good. I don't want to read too much into this, though, because the Revs, I'm not going to say they quit, but they certainly weren't up for the fight after going down a man. And I thought you could argue for the first 20 minutes they were the better team. You don't take too much from when Chicago got smashed by Atlanta when they played down a man for 70 minutes. I don't want to make too much of this the other way. I will say that the Fire have a lot of talent, and Schweinsteiger is up for it. He's not here cashing a paycheck. He's not here retiring on the beautiful beaches of Lake Michigan. He's here to win games, and that makes it a lot of fun.
I got something that'll get you excited that you'll read into, though. Daniel Johnson going to work down on that wing, the step over the back. I've never even seen that move before, and he almost got a goal out of it. I guess you have to shoot after you do that. But he's putting on a show on the wing. Solinac
there was good. There was some hubbub. I forgot the word for this, but people, Kirk Gomez put out there, why are you doing this, bro? You're up 3-0. You're a man up. It's the end of the game. Don't do that.
Tom and Scott Caldwell kind of got in a fight over getting megged and them being up 3-0 and whatnot.
It's like the player's code, right? You don't do that to guys, but for fans and for journalists and pundits, I love it.
Also, if you're trying to win a spot, if you're off the bench and you're trying to win more playing time in a spot, not saying Meg guys, but I'm saying you're allowed to work hard. One team that didn't get to carry out their victory and show off was Houston. They were up 2-0 against Minnesota. Everyone thinks a win's coming for them. And then Christian Ramirez gets a goal off a corner kick. I almost made a mistake. And then they get a second goal through Venegas. At first, it looked dominant for Houston. Kubo sets up Manotas, who starts out on that left wing. We've got a great phone call about Manotas later. Kyoto comes off the bench. What do you walk away with from this one, Ben, in terms of these two teams? For Houston, like when you get Minnesota to come in, it's a must win at this point for teams to try and keep up.
First of all, I just want to say that I'm really happy for Doyle that Minnesota is getting results now. I'm really happy for him.
And Atlanta loses the same weekend. I know. Wow. Worry about Atlanta.
It's all about Doyle right now. I think if you're a Minnesota fan, you do have to take heart that you are getting results. You do look a little, Houston's goals. One was the least set piece where you don't know where Cavill is doing. One was off a quick throw in. Not the kind of goals that were being scored on them early in the season. It seems like that Cronin and Birch are shoring up the defense, and Keith went with a little bit more defensive lineup, especially in this one, on the road, which I think is the right thing to do right now. So, we'll see how they come when they come back home this week, see how they play, see if they're a little bit more open or if they try and just keep on building that defensive posture. And
I think they have to build from that defensive posture. They do not have any margin of error on that side of the ball because they're so bad defending set pieces. So they have to keep it tight at the back, and I think they have to keep it tight through midfield and just rely on the guys that they have in Christian Ramirez and Molino and Venegas to create the goals.
How big a difference did Cronin and Birch make for this one? They both get the start after the trade.
Yeah, I thought they were both really pretty good. Birch was a little bit sleepy on the first on the Minotas goal, but that happens when you move to a new team. I don't think anybody should confuse this for a playoff team, but I think the days of them conceding 5 or 6 goals a game are pretty well in the past at this point.
Let's talk about one team that is well on the way to the playoffs. I don't know if that's true, but Real Salt Lake gets their second
straight wing
under Pecky. You're saying that they're not going to make it? Guarantee it.
I'm not saying anything. I'm saying you said they were well on their way.
They're in sixth right now.
7 games in.
They're in sixth place right now after being one of the last winless teams. RSL wins 2-1 at Colorado. 2 goals in 3 minutes in the 85th and 88th to get the win. It's the Rocky Mountain Cup. Mike Petke's 2-0. He's got, no center backs. Tony Beltran's hurt for the first time in, 10 years. They bring Luis Silva and then all Real Monarchs players off the bench. This is fairly impressive, Doyle, what Pecky's been able to do.
I think he's made a couple adjustments. It is more of a 4-3-3. I think that he's got Luke Mulholland playing a little bit higher in central midfield and Kyle Beckerman a little bit deeper, asking a little less running out of him. That makes sense to me. Danilo Acosta, who started off for Rail Monarchs as a D-mid, played last year, and they realized that probably wasn't going to work for him, played him at left back, which is where he played with the U-20s, and now he's playing at right back. He's been an asset the last two games. He's been very, very good. So I think that's been a surprise. And then the other thing is he's moved the wingers a little higher up the pitch and a little tighter. Drauplata had a great game last week, and Brooks Lennon had the game winner this week. So I think that a couple of things are sort of snapping into place. It also helps that Albert Rusnak has learned the league, I think, pretty quickly. And Jura Movsisian is scoring. Jura was maybe not fit to start the year, but now he's got goals in four straight games. And when your DP striker is producing, you're going to get some wins.
And for the Rapids, we're seeing, you know, for the first time in a year that they can concede goals. And next week could be tough, too. You know, they're going to Minnesota. Minnesota has shown that they can score goals. And they'll be going there without Schuberg. And Watt's got a red card in this game.
Boateng,
he's not going to be there.
Boateng's
injured. So, you know, it could go down a little bit downhill, you know, over the past couple weeks.
And we didn't get to – I don't think you guys got to do the show in time last week, but Tim Howard suspended. This is the first of a three-game suspension, so they won't have him as well. Colorado, dangerous times right now. TFC kind of as well. TFC, three games winless now. Drew Moore had an irregular heartbeat, so he did not start in this one. Our thoughts go out to him. We hope that everything's okay with him. For TFC, though, they go into Columbus, the big-time Trillium Cup game, and Columbus gets the win. Miriam continues to remain on fire, but we talked about it in the Philly segment. Ethan Finley doesn't start. Nico Hansen gets the start on that wing. What are you seeing from the crew right now? Because Berhalter's played three or four formations. He's gotten a couple wins in a row. Is this team where he wants it to be, or is he still trying to figure it out?
I think there's still some stuff that needs to be figured out, but Justin Miriam's playing best 11 caliber soccer. Federico Higuain has found the fountain of youth a little bit.
Right after we troll, jumped on his dead body.
Saying he's washed.
They're going to have to manage his minutes just because he is getting up in age, and he does do so much running, more than the typical number 10. So I think that's something to keep an eye on, but he's been very, very good in a way that he wasn't the past year and a half. But I think it's two of the new additions in Arthur in central midfield. He's been, I think, a better partner for Will Trapp than I expected, just for his ability to do all the passing work, but also to be a physical presence. And then Alex Cronally in central defense, he's not a Walker Zimmerman level athlete, but he's still a big, huge physical presence in the box who can still come off that line and handle guys in space. He has the quickness to do that. And that's given Columbus a little bit more flexibility in how they're lining up defensively, where they're setting their line, and the risks that the fullbacks can take. And they're getting points because of it.
On the other side, Michael Bradley says after this game, that's a game that should be almost impossible to lose. We managed in a span of 10 minutes to totally give the game away. No more, as we said. So they play Haglin in the middle of the three-man back line. Edwards gets another start on the wing. Everyone else, basically, their starters are in the team. Josie finally gets a goal. Is there any worry on the TFC side?
No. I think...
The question is,
I think they're still just trying to figure out how this is all going to work, you know, and with Moore being out, that really puts a lot of pressure on those other defenders to perform, to communicate with each other, because Moore's doing all the communication back there. Morrow's playing in a different position. Edwards is still young, and they're still really trying to figure out how Vasquez has been playing well, but how is that three going to work? And, you know, obviously Javinko has not been, you know, his incredible. He's just like really good, not like amazing.
Doyle said before that Spector might be the most important defender in the league. I think Drew Moore has to be in that conversation as well. Based on what you said, it has to be worrying that if he's the one player that's the linchpin on that back line, if he's out and Mavinga and Haglin and Zavaleta can't play that role, this team can't make a run at Supporter Shield or MLS Cup missing that one player. That could be worrying for this team.
It could be. You know, and obviously the most important thing is Drew Moore's health. But I think that I actually thought I actually thought the defense did a pretty decent job. The first goal, the only open play goal that they gave up came after a midfield turnover, and totally unnecessary turnover from Armando Cooper. It wasn't really a defensive breakdown. And then obviously Nico Hansen made a great play, and Ola Kamara did what Ola Kamara does. So I'm not super concerned about that yet. I am maybe a little bit more concerned about Jovinko, because he has not been himself since coming back from that injury late last year. And I know he put up really good numbers in the postseason, but his touch has been off. His quickness, he just hasn't created the separation that we expect from him. And his finishing is just not, it has not been Sebastian Giovinco-esque. We'll see. Stars find a way to be good longer. And I'm sure that, not sure, but I would wager on him figuring it out sometime in the next couple of weeks. But at some point, you have to be a little bit tuned into what's kind of not happening for him.
Last one other thing to mention. You mentioned Armando Cooper, his former Rabbe Unido teammate, Amilcar Enriquez, was gunned down in Panama this weekend. It's a dark spot for all of the soccer community, so we want to send our thoughts out to Panama, to Armando Cooper, to everyone around the Panamanian national team of Rabbe Unido after that terrible, terrible tragedy. Enriquez was a great player, played against the U.S. last week, played in CCL against MLS teams, but was a fantastic player to watch. It's really unfortunate to hear. Let's get back to soccer a little bit, though. Portland SKC closed out Saturday night. Dom Dwyer gets the goal. A lot of great work from him. Jimmy Madronda sets him up. The question for me from this one is SKC the best defense in the league? And if it is, over these last few years, is it one of the best defenses we've seen?
I don't think there's any question they're the best defense in the league this year so far. They've given up two goals. And part of that is Tim Mealy making a couple of big saves. I mean, the PK in week one, and then the save on Darlington Nagbe, which is one of the two or three best saves of the year so far at Portland. But the whole thing is just clicking with Opara and Beasler in central defense. Ilya Sanchez has been a really, really, really good addition under the radar. And credit to Seth Sinovic and Graham Zusi. They have been very, very good fullbacks. So, yeah, for my money, they are the best defense in the league thus far. And, you know, maybe put them up there with that 2013 Sporting KC defense that won MLS Cup. It certainly, if Opara stays healthy, I could see that happening.
Well, they have been great so far, but maybe they've been a little bit lucky. Maybe they're relying on Amelia a little bit too much. I'm looking at their expected goals numbers right now.
Felt an expected goal stat coming.
Looking at their expected goals number right now, and they're actually eighth defensively. Eighth. So, you know, on average, based on the quality of chances that they've conceded, you would have expected their opponents to score six goals. Right now, they've only given up two. You could chalk that up to being lucky. You could chalk that up to being Mealy being really good. But, you know, we'll see if this continues, this trend continues.
I think part of that is they've played at some pretty good attacking teams, especially Toronto and at Portland. But part of that is, I think Peter Vermees has been slow with his subs. I think that, and because of it, we've seen Sporting kind of break down and lose control of the game a little bit over the last 15 minutes. It happened in this game. It happened at Toronto a little bit, and it definitely happened against San Jose back in the middle of March when San Jose almost came back and got a second goal and would have gotten a tie out of Sporting Park there. So I agree with you that expected goals can maybe show where the weakness is, but I think it's a very kind of explainable weakness given the way Vermees has been really reluctant to sub.
Another piece of exciting news from the weekend, New York Red Bulls fans got a win. We got a call from Bill Carroll, literally sitting in the stadium. We're going to play that in the mailbag, but if any fan ever calls the hotline from inside the stadium, especially during or after a game, you're automatically getting on all the time. So,
and also, if you send us a call while like the dupe chant is going on, or while Whoa Dynamo is going on, yeah, that's an added plus
or
on top
fire,
of that.
Fire.
Or fire, Just, you know.
Believe.
Yeah.
All of the good goal chance.
Good goal chance.
It's 401-206-0MLS. That's as much singing as you're going to get from me today. Red Bulls go 4-2-3-1. Doyle, hallelujah. Praise the soccer gods because the Red Bulls are back. Right? Sasha Kljestan playing in the middle, pulling the strings and getting it done.
I mean, they went 4-2-3-1 last week as well, and they've been switching into it in the middle of the game for the entire season. I mean, remember, way back in week one, with 25 minutes left, they went to a 4-2-3-1 and ended up getting that win at Atlanta. This is, I think, what their personnel dictates. It's not a surprise to see them play better, especially Kljestan and BWP, who's better when he has a little bit of space rather than a tight partner to work off of. Muil getting that goal, I think was a relief, but they're going to need goals from their wingers, from open play. And they just, no matter who they've put out there this year, it hasn't really happened for them. So as good as the feelings are after a 2-0 win over their longstanding rivals, I don't feel like the Red Bulls are out of the woods just yet.
Bill Hamid would love to have done better. Would love to face that BWP shot, I'm sure. 99 times he makes that save out of 100, but BWP doesn't care. He gets his goal again. Let's head to the break. Don't forget, the team's name is Real Madrid. The man's name is Raul. He's coming up right on the other side, sitting down with Ben Bear.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Look around. Some friends, some friends. Some friends don't stick around.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. An exciting week for Major League Soccer. Announcing the All-Star opponent. It will be in Chicago August 2nd at Soldier Field. The 2017 MLS All-Star Game presented by Target. And it will be Real Madrid. Arguably one of the two biggest teams in the world. The game will be broadcast at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on FS1, Unimas, TSN, and TVA Sports in the USA and Canada. Real Madrid, 32 La Liga championships. Potentially 33 by that time, 11 UEFA Champions League titles, potentially 12 by that time, as they've already crushed Bayern Munich in the first leg, and they have the Clásico coming up against Barcelona, and they're leading in La Liga. Probably the best name you could get right now, I think, in the world. They look like they're on their way to another Champions League title. Gareth Bale, Karim Benzema.
Maybe Gareth Bale.
Nice. Cristiano Ronaldo, that guy's pretty good. Toni Kroos, Luka Modric. When you look at all-star games, when you look at who MLS could play, it's probably as exciting a game it could be. It's also in Soldier Field, which means it's going to be about 61,000, 62,000. Veljko Panovic will manage the side, and I'm pretty sure Doyle Bastian Schweinsteiger will start somewhere in that team.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it works, right? You got it's an all-star game, so you put the stars out there. I'm curious. I'm curious to see if our man Sam Stachko's 11 will get any traction, because he wrote up with our listeners, because he wrote up a pretty decent column picking the 11 players that he'd want on the field for MLS against Madrid in this game. Tim Howard in goal, back line left to right of Greg Garza, Hedges and Zimmerman. Nick Lima at right back. Defensive midfielders Michael Bradley and Kellen Acosta. Imagine seeing them on the same team together, U.S. fans. And then the three line would be left to right, Almiron, Jovinko, and Ladero, and then David Villa up top.
How does Valeri get shade twice this episode? He's the best player in MLS.
He's playing the best in MLS.
He is the best player in Major League Soccer currently.
Currently.
You guys are both crazy.
That doesn't mean it's going to be the same thing in August.
It'll be great to see David Villa, though. He's played for every rival of Real Madrid, as well as winning a World Cup for Spain. He'll be a fun one to watch in this one. There's a few other players in Major League Soccer that dislike Real Madrid. Kaká played for Real Madrid.
Ilya Sanchez.
So many Madrid connections. Whenever that team travels, it's insanity. People follow that team. People go crazy. People love it. One man that knows that better than anyone else is Raul, the all-time leading goal scorer in Real Madrid history. Ben, you had a chance to sit down with him before we get on with him. Mm-hmm. We'll hear the interview. What do you think of Raul?
I mean, again, just a special human being.
He's still glowing. That's why I asked. I just said his name and, like, the look on your face, I was like, I got to get Ben to say something.
Are you a Madridista?
No. Are you kidding? I'm not a fan of any European team.
Ben hates soccer.
It was great.
Ben likes his Montreal Impact.
It was cool because we were supposed to, like, to get inside baseball here. Goss was supposed to do the interview in between the two finals at GA Cup, but the NYC game went to extra time. So I had to go run down and do it on the field with him. And he's like, nah, like, we can't do this while the game is going on. I have to watch this game.
He obviously respects the game.
He just respected it. So it was River Plate versus Flamengo in the Champions Division final. He's like, I have to watch this game. So we watched the game, and then we did it at halftime while they're warming up.
Let's go to Ben and Raul now from Toyota Stadium.
I'm Ben Baer, down here sitting on the Toyota Stadium field at Generation Adidas Cup, where NYCFC just took the Premier Division crown, and I'm sitting next to the legendary striker for Real Madrid, for the Spanish national team, Raul. How you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What are you doing down here in Frisco?
No, I'm working now from La Liga. We bring two teams for under 17 and two teams for under 12 in Dallas, in IG Adidas Generation, and I think to enjoy the best soccer in USA. You know, I think this tournament is amazing. It's my second time in Dallas, and every year you can see more talent to improve the teams, and today very happy, no, that NYC they won the first title in history, you know,
ever trophy.
and it was a very tough game for them, but Tigres, they played well in the second half, but very happy that NYC won the game.
And, no? Of course, a little bit of personal connection there. Your son is in the NYCFC Academy.
I have Hugo in the under 14, and I know perfectly the player, but sometimes training together, and I'm very happy, and congratulations to the NYC.
So you, of course, Malaga took the U12 crown today against Villarreal.
Yeah.
So what is the relationship between La Liga and MLS?
Yeah, we have very good relationship. We are working together in coaching education and to create this tournament that in Spain is very important. The best tournament in Spain is 7-7. Mm-hmm. And I think every year is the teams, the players. You can see that they are improving a lot, no? And I think the key for to improve the soccer here in the USA is to start with the young kids, with 9, 10, 11, 12, and to do tournament like that, no? That the under 12. The two teams from Spain, they arrived to the final.
They did pretty good if you check the results on MLSsoccer.com.
They played very well, but also in NYC, they arrived to the fourth. Orlando, they played very well. And also a lot of teams. I think I can see this year that a lot of teams, they improve to see the players with more quality. And I think they have to continue. No, this tournament is great, but I think we have to do more tournament during the year.
Exactly. No? Personally, I mean, I've been down here for a week. The U12s were really fun to
very
watch.
Yeah,
so of course on Saturday, you are Real Madrid great. Real Madrid was announced as the opponent for the MLS All Star Game in Chicago. How excited are you about that?
Yeah, it's a great news. No, I was the last year in the All Star Game in San Jose. My team is Real Madrid, and it's a really new, no? I think it will be an amazing game in Chicago. I think Real Madrid always come here to play different games, but I think this game in the USA is very special, and to play against the best players on the MLS, it will be an amazing game, no?
This might be a big question, but, you know, you're from Madrid. Yeah. You grew up in the Madrid Academy. What does the club mean to you personally?
I think it's my home. No, I think the Real Madrid, they have a lot of values. The kids, always to you try to play well, to win, don't give up, never. And I think it's amazing that Real Madrid, that the under 17 is playing here in Dallas, and now in the All-Star, the first team is coming, no?
So, you know, you've been to Germany, you've been to, obviously, from Spain, you've been to Qatar, you've been to New York. What is the name Real Madrid? How does that resonate around the world?
Ah, it's amazing. You can go to one part in the world, and everybody know the Real Madrid. Everybody know the best players in the club, and I think it's very important, no? The Real Madrid, also the league, La Liga is, I think, for us, is the best league in the world, with more quality and very good players, very good coaches. But also there are another leagues now that they are very important, and also they are very good players.
Last question. So how does a player like you get created? Like how do you have to have, you know, that will inside you? Are you born with your skills, or is that something that's created?
No, I think you have. You're born with something, with talent, no? But yeah. I think you have to, you can work, you can improve every day. You have to listen or to hear the coaches, the teammates. I think every player, I think, has a talent, no? But if you work every day very hard, you can improve and to be a best player, no?
All right, so that's it. That's it with Raul. Check MLSoccer.com for all the GA Cup coverage. It was a great week down here. Mm-hmm. And be sure to tune in for the All-Star game.
Yes, of course. I will be there. I will be there. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can hear how excited Raul is. Everyone else should get excited as well. He knows how much it means to Madrid fans in the United States for their team to come. And I think how big it's going to be for the connection between La Liga and Major League Soccer, as well as for the MLS All-Star game and for the city of Chicago. Before we finish off, though, let's talk a little bit about Generation Adidas Cup. This is his second year there. I was there last year with Raul, and as you said before the interview, he really watches the game. He loves being a part of this tournament. He called it the best youth tournament in the United States. Some top-level talent playing. Let's start with the big names for 14-year-olds. Giovanni Reyna wins the title for NYCFC in their first time to this tournament. And Ziggy Schmidt said on the broadcast, you have generations of teams. And he referenced, you know, old Ajax teams. He talked about Xavi and Iniesta coming through at Barcelona together. And that's what he said when he was talking about that NYCFC
team.
I
was shocked when he said that. I got excited. But Reyna won the Golden Ball as well. That team was special. You know, I think they were in the Premier Division, which is actually really the second division of the tournament. The Champions Division had the best teams. They won that Premier Division. We were talking about why they didn't qualify for the Champions Division, and it's pretty easy to figure out. They were the youngest team at this tournament. They were sixth. Qualifying happened in October and February. They were even younger then. That's why they didn't qualify the Champions Division, we figure. But this team is special. Gio Reyna is a number 10. He's what we always look for. You know, his first touch is great. He glides. He's not incredibly fast, but he glides.
But he blows by defenders.
He glides past defenders because he's just fast on the ball. Which is not
he's
something
not fast,
you see.
But he's athletic, is what you're saying.
Yes, Stowell's favorite defining athleticism. What is athleticism? He stung a few shots that were saved. I think he stung one off the bar.
Yeah.
He had a lot of chances created. He had two assists in the tournament.
Great goal off a direct set piece.
Great goal
against
Saprissa. Not a great Saprissa team, but they were. Will Sands is a winger. Great lethal left foot. Twin brother of James Sands, who just called up to the U-17 national team, who was in training camp with NYC. He's really good. They had a couple. They didn't allow a goal the whole tournament. They had a couple good center backs. Their left back, their right back was really good.
Sounds like you're a real NYCFC fan, I'm guessing then your European team is Manchester City.
Hilarious. No, I mean, I watched a lot of the games because they advanced far in the tournament. They were playing some a Mexican team in the group stage that I enjoyed.
Pumas,
yeah.
So
they look good against that team as well.
NYCFC wins their group. They look fantastic. A young team, as you said. Let's talk about a few other people. FC Dallas is a name that a lot of people hear from us when we talk about youth development. They did not have as strong a generation Adidas Cup, but but they won the Super Group in Dallas Cup. Paxton Pomykal, Jesus Ferreira leading them there. Reggie Cannon getting playing time. So still some bright spots for this FC Dallas.
It's important to keep in mind for that GA Cup team, they didn't have – they could have been playing Jesus Ferreira
and Brian
and
Reynolds,
Brian Reynolds on that team, but Reynolds was the national team and Ferreira was playing on the Dallas Cup team. If they had those two players, I think not only – they beat Madrid.
Right.
Not only could they have done that, but they could have been one of the – advanced to the semifinals of the GA Cup. They ended up finishing seventh after beating the Galaxy in a great game.
Let's talk about the Galaxy. Efrain Alvarez, 14 years old as well, just like Giovanni Reyna, arguably the best player at this tournament, along with Reyna. He's
among MLS players. Among MLS,
among
players.
MLS players. But I think amongst all players. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way he played, his ability on the ball to find openings, to float in and out of space, every pass he played, the curve was perfect. The weight was perfect.
The ball just checks up when he passes the ball. It's like it's something that I didn't see any of the player being able to do. Every single time he chips it over, and it goes. It's on a dime, and it just checks up. It doesn't bounce. It's backspin. It's great. Like seeing that live, like right in front of you.
For
compare him to an MLS player in terms of play style, just to give our fans a better framework for where he plays and what his strengths are.
Well, you know, he's only 14 years old. I think he has a lot. He needs to, you know, grow up into his body because right now he's still carrying some baby
Doyle's
face.
Doyle's asking you to overhype him.
He's,
do it now.
I'm not going
to
overhype him. He's
Mauro Diaz.
I don't know if he – I don't think he's Mauro Diaz. He played at right. He played at –
he's Nico Lodero.
He played on the right wing in this tournament. I think he could be Jack Harrison. I'm not sure he's that fast. And he's probably a little bit better. He's a better passer, but I think he can be that type of player.
So you just said a player and then said he has completely different traits than him. Very good, Ben.
Same position, though.
For fans out there to get excited, we interviewed John Barry earlier in the season here. Sporting KC, a big tournament for them. They've made it to the Champions Division. Big steps for that academy. Atlanta United in their first year as well. They get to the Champions Division. They were a team that impressed early on. They went up to the final of almost making the playoffs. New York Red Bulls, third place in the Champions Division, the higher division. They lost in penalty kicks to Flamengo. Otherwise, they would have been going to the final against River Plate. Ben Mines, who's been playing for the Red Bulls 2 team in USL, he's the leading scorer in the, I believe, in the division.
He's in the whole division. He won the Golden Boot.
So Red Bulls, that's another team to be excited about. Doyle, let me ask you this question. NYCFC wins the second division. Red Bulls gets third place in the first division. Which team did better?
It doesn't matter. Whichever team puts more players into the first team did better. I do like to see teams that win. Learning how to win is a big part of the game of any sport, and I think that I'm glad to see. Look, FC Dallas emphasizes it, and I don't think anybody's going to argue that FC Dallas doesn't build great players out of their academy. But when it's all said and done, the team that did best is a team that puts more players into the first team and makes more money off of sales and so on and so forth.
Well, for the Red Bulls, you're definitely going to see Mines on the first team at some point, I would think, over the next couple of years. I think a big point coming out of this tournament is that MLS teams did really well against Liga MX teams. They struggled against other South American teams such as Flamengo, River Plate, Independiente. Those teams brought players who were older, though. In some cases, 1-2 years older on average. So, you know, they got some encouraging results against Liga MX teams and some not-so-great results against teams that were much older than them.
Yeah, to echo what Ben says as we close out here, this is my third year there, and it was – MLS teams in all 3 years have gotten closer and tighter with international competition, and a range of teams had some big performances. It's exciting to see what's going on the youth side. It's also exciting to hear that Real Madrid's heading this way this summer to face off against the All-Stars. August 2nd, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, FS1 Unimas, TVA Sports and TSN Sports. That one will be presented by Target at Soldier Field. When we come back, we'll get to your voicemails in the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Dale, sin miedo, arriesgate y sígueme al juego. Sola, creo, y a tu
Back now on Extra Time Radio alongside Matt Doyle and Jack Ben Bear McInerney, the goal scorer of my heart, as Ben prepares to play a little co-ed soccer tonight. How many are you going to score, Ben? You've been watching youth soccer from the sideline next to a ton of high-level coaches for, what, 8 days?
U.S. scouts, college scouts.
International scouts.
International scouts.
You've listened
agents.
To multiple symposiums about coaching from coaches from Estudiantes, Real Madrid, Malaga. How many goals can I – how's the movement going
to
be tonight?
I know exactly what I'm going to do now. I know exactly how to play soccer after watching all this, after going to symposiums, just talking to scouts. I know how to play soccer now. I'm going to score 4 goals tonight.
Thursday starting with the update that Ben scored 0 goals. Okay, let's get to our hotline. Let's get to the voicemail. Ben, what's the phone number?
402-601.
401-206-0-MLS.
I blame that on Weeby because his singing and his jingles are awful. Well, we need jingles, people.
We've got a couple more jingles.
The phone number.
We've got a couple more jingles coming up. Let's start with the Houston Dynamo.
Hey, guys. This is Eric calling about the Dynamo today. And after watching this past game this weekend, I really have to say that I think Minotas has to play the number 10 for this team. He puts in the work defensively, he loves to connect with the other players, and he's obviously a goal-scoring threat. And add on to that, that he wasn't sticking to the wing, much to the frustration of Wilmer on Saturday. I think it's kind of a natural fit, and it seems like a needed one after the deplorable second-half performance from the Dynamo.
I mean, that's definitely a take.
Sizzle. Fuego.
Minotas has been playing really well. I don't know, you're going to have to fit Kyoto, Elise, and Minotas on those two wing positions. Minotas, I don't think, is a number 10. I think they do need to find a number 10. I think Alex has been playing really well at that position. I would love to see him as a number 8. Of course, I would kick out Rico Clark out of the lineup, so I don't know how they're going to work this. I mean, you can go out and get Ty and Mack and play him in number 10.
Tommy Mack's going to be playing for 7 MLS teams by the time we finish this episode.
Between those three spots, you have 4 players. So you can shuttle them in and out depending on what the tactics are.
Don't Minotas forget Wenger.
And Andrew Wenger, yeah.
I mean, that's 5 players between those three spots.
Yeah.
Do you think, let's say in August, one of these players one of these players is sitting on the bench every game? Do they make a move? Do they find a formation that fits everyone in?
I think that they are going to have to listen seriously to trade offers. And I know that they're getting them seriously for Minotas in particular. He has a ton of trade value in this league. And it's not as a number 10. It's as a striker. Everything has a price, right? So if you're able, if somebody comes in and offers them the right playmaker, the right amount of GAM or TAM, then something could happen. And I don't expect it to happen this window, but I wouldn't be shocked if it did happen in the summertime window.
Let's talk about young players a little bit more, one in Colorado.
Hey, guys, this is Ed from St. Louis. The call about Christian Roldan got me thinking, you think we'll ever see Dylan Cerna for Colorado play in that box-to-box role after being a right mid and a left back through the years, showing a lot of promise but never getting any playing time?
No, I think he's a wide player in the league. I know he's gotten a little time at left wing and a little time at left back, and I think that's probably where his future is. I'm thinking that with the trade that they just made and with Michael Williams struggling at left back, I would certainly like to see Dylan Cerna get some run there. I think he has the tools to make it work, but I'm not sure if Colorado feel the same way about it.
Colorado can turn him into Dylan Soucy. Let's stick with the Colorado Rapids. Here's one more.
Hey, you guys. This is Mikey from Northwest Tennessee, somewhere in there on the Appalachian Trail. Colin, I got 2 takes for you. 1 hot, 1 everybody knows. I'll let you guys decide which. First, Colorado Rapids Dynasty, MLS Cup 2017, 18, and 19. Pablo Mascherani gets hired as USNNT head coach. They win 2022 World Cup easy. Marlon Harrison, hat trick in the finals. Second take, David Goss carries the show. No David Goss, no ETR. Last thing, 401-206-0-MLS. We're here for David Goss.
Guys, that's some Fuego.
So we have a guy.
Fuego stuff right there.
That's not even a hot take. That's just ridiculous. We have a guy predicting the Rapids to be an all-time MLS team and Marlon Hairston to lead the U.S. to the 2022 World Cup, was it?
Yeah.
And ends singing the RSL song.
Yeah.
Like, what is going on here?
Going on is that my love for the game and the love for me.
No, this is like a David
breaks
Lynch
all
turn to this podcast. This is terrible.
Who breaks down all animosities and brings the world together. That's all I have to say. It's called a hot take hotline, Doyle. That's what happens when you get a little bit of sizzle. Here's a hot take hotline legend, Bill Carroll. This is a great phone call.
What's up, boys? Bill Carroll calling from Section 132 with the sounds of the South Ward behind me. Prediction tonight, we're going 3-0 Red Bulls BWP hat trick. Later, boys.
Once again, if you call from the stadium, you automatically get on the show. That's legendary stuff. And he got the score almost right.
I mean, I just love Bill's accent. It's just it's just so good.
Bill Carroll's the man.
It's just what I grew up with, and I love it.
Bill Carroll's the man, and he was close to right, though. 2-0 Red Bulls get the win against DC United because Red Bulls are cruising now because, as Sasha Kleshin said, they're not Red Bull Leipzig, which was surprising to hear.
They're not?
Yeah.
Oh, those are two different teams.
You thought the teams were the same.
What about that other Red Bull team?
Which one? The one in Brazil or the one in Salzburg?
Both.
Okay. Well, let's move on. Let's get to a little bit of Minnesota. You asked for jingles, Ben, so here you go.
You gotta call the hotline to get heard on extra time. 401-206-0MLS. I know it's a little bit of a ripoff, but it fit and I liked it. This is Looney Loon, and I think that Minnesota United will finish ahead of LA Galaxy in points, but behind in goal differential. Go Loons.
Go Loons.
I love the qualifier of the goal differential. just because they got –
Ben was physically dancing.
That was really good. I think we need to the first two lines were really good, and then we just have to clean up, you know, how the cadence of the actual, you know, phone number works. But the first two lines, I think we have something here.
I think what people don't realize is outside of being an expected goals expert, you actually interned for Hans Zimmer, and you're a – natural composer. Clearly, Ben, coming over here throwing shade on people when you can't sing a lick of anything for anything. Let's finish out one more voicemail that we've got here.
This is Gino, season ticket holder in San Jose. I got two hot takes. The first is that Dominic Kinnear does not survive the 2017 season without A, 50 points at year end, and B, a victory in the first round of the MLS playoffs. And the second hot take is San Jose versus Sacramento will be the greatest rivalry in MLS next to Seattle, Portland, NYCFC, and Red Bulls, and LAFC, and the Galaxy. Go Quakes!
I mean, I forgot how excited to be about a potential San Jose-Sacramento matchup. Both those cities love their team. Doyle, you would be smack dab in the middle of it. We could assume that you'd at least go to a stadium and watch that one.
I would, you know, maybe leave the house once or twice for that. I hope it happens. I think that Sacramento's done a lot of good things, and there's a lot of talent up here. And I'm a big believer in the fact that teams with kind of overlapping fan bases can actually raise both. I don't believe all that much in like cannibalization of fan bases or interest. I think having that kind of friction it makes it better for everyone involved. So I definitely hope we get to see Sacramento in MLS. I hope it would be a great rivalry. As for the stuff about Kinnear, I don't like to speculate about people losing their jobs, but I think that Dom is pretty clearly in a tough situation and has got to figure out some solutions, maybe even before the year is over.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing with Jim Curran. You know, they were hired by their GMs. So, you know, they're not their guys. So they really have to perform to continue to keep their jobs, I think.
Let's jump over on Twitter. David G at What's Up. It's David. Love the handle. Love the name. Could Orlando City Stadium be the toughest place to play this season? What other stadiums put the hurt on teams? So let's We've talked about Orlando's home. What are the other toughest atmospheres for away teams to go into? What are the best home venues?
There's obviously Portland and SKC. But then there's also other factors like turf, which we heard, I forgot who was talking about it, but the Revs being one of the toughest places to go just because of that turf that they play on.
You've also got weather. You've got the altitude in Colorado. You've got the heat in Houston. What will eventually probably be the heat in Orlando on top of the crowd might be overwhelmingly the best. Doyle, what do you think is the single toughest home scenario for teams to go into?
I think that the altitude has always been just a huge factor for Colorado and their success. But since Red Bull Arena opened, the Red Bulls have taken the most home points of anybody in the league. And that's hard to ignore. Now, we all know that that place doesn't fill up like everybody wishes it would. But when it does, when they have 24,000, 25,000 people in there, that place is a madhouse. That is a great, great place to watch a soccer game.
Ryan Walters on Twitter, goal in Vancouver versus Seattle, Freddie breaking the curse, and Alonso keeping him onside by staying on the post per Empire Goss's advice. That happens like once every 18,000 games that someone would be offside on a corner kick, so I refuse to make that the reason. Also, if you're properly taught, you stand inside the goal, so you're actually not keeping anyone onside, and you step forward to make the play. But that's neither here nor there. Let's close out with some All-Star game before a couple of factoids that we finish on. Excited about Real Madrid is Colson T. He wants to know about the format, though. It comes up every year, East versus West, American versus international all-star players, or playing against an international team like a Real Madrid. Where do you guys stand? Do you think it'll change anytime soon?
I would love to see an all-star game that was just MLS players. I don't think that's going to happen anytime in the next 5 years, I'm going to say. What I would like to see is CONCACAF versus the world.
Whoa, getting CONCACAF-y. Doyle, any preference on your end?
The only thing that would make it all that interesting to me would be if it was MLS versus Liga MX in the All-Star game.
Like two sets of All-Stars from either league.
Yeah, the MLS All-Stars versus the Liga MX All-Stars. I think that would be dope. But other than that,
that would be
awesome. People talk about it. I just don't know when you play that because the schedules don't really line up.
Right. That would be awesome. I think it would be awesome if it ended up being like a 4v4 tournament where, you know, five or six All-Stars get to pick their squads and watch them play, or futsal or something like that. Let's finish on two little notes. CCL final, first leg is on Wednesday night. Pachuca versus Tigres. Everyone pick a winner at the end of these two legs.
I'm going to go with Tigres.
Doyle? I'm going with Omar, man.
Yeah, me too. I think Pachuca, the defense, Chucky's back and healthy, rolling
Tigres
through.
Tigres are killing it right now, just for the record.
So everyone knows, Ben does own a Tigres jersey. So.
Ben is also a Tigres fan.
So there you go. And the last one, the USU-17s named their roster for qualifying, which begins in Panama in about a week. Doyle, what are your thoughts off this roster? Chris Durkin makes the team, Andrew Carlton, a few other MLS guys.
I mean, those are the two big names. I mean, there are certainly others. A lot of guys coming out of MLS academies, a few who come from other big name academies. I really liked what I saw of this team back in December against Brazil, especially in the Nike friendlies. If they play like that, they have a shot to make it at least to the semifinals, which is what, you know, Landon Donovan's U-17 team did almost 20 years ago now. Other than the guys that we named, the one who was particularly impressive to me was Sanz, the center back / central midfielder, defensive midfielder for NYCFC. I think he reads the game at a really high level, and he has an assuredness in his movement that I think kind of projects forward throughout the lineup. This is going to be a fun team to watch, so make sure you find a stream, folks.
Might have a dominant defense on this team with Chris Gloucester. You mentioned James Sands, Jalen Lindsay. We've got a lot of great talent in midfield on this team as well. A few more.
Sargent and Akinola as well up top.
Right.
Those are pretty good players.
And someone who's George Weah's son named Timothy Weah, who plays for a club called PSG over in France, out of New York. So some exciting talent there. It'll be on Facebook streaming for that one. For us, that's it. Myself, David Goss. Thank you, Ben Bear and Matt Doyle. Don't forget, Thursday, we will start off with the Ben Bear soccer goal scoring update, that big old goose egg. And thank you to Raul, who scored a couple of goals in his career, for taking the time to talk to us and being here in the United States and enjoying what was a fantastic Generation Adidas Cup. We'll see you guys next time.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.